Because, like usual, I'm starving. Go Gox.
Welcome to Movie Podcast. That's right.
Billy.
Movie the Podcast. It is Blanksgiving. We are watching pirate-based films.
It should have been Blanksgiving. It would be all movies that are like shoot 'em up.
Blank Man.
Yeah, we could have Blank Man.
I thought it was movies that used blanks, like shoot 'em up movies.
We can't watch Crow.
What's that Alec Baldwin movie?
Oh, shit.
Rust or whatever it's called.
Rust, yeah.
Anywho,
that was a good one, Al.
We watched Hook, Steven Spielberg's Hook, an interesting film.
It is something.
Fucking bananas.
Something. It is like, there's like two movies in this movie.
Yeah, and you could have cut one of them because it's so fucking long.
If you showed somebody Jaws and then showed them this, like back to back, or like the same guy made these two
same
movies, like what? Their head would explode. Or like Schindler's List and Hook.
Now I'm gonna put it on Front Street. I think I can. I don't think I can objectively like rate this movie because I think it carries too much nostalgia from when I was a kid.
I can.
But there's some parts of it where you're like, that's a choice. That was a choice.
I remember, we talked about this briefly at the end of the show last week, but I do remember watching this movie as a kid quite a lot. And watching it now, I'm like, how did I watch this? Because it's like very, very long. And like,
this was
kind of like, even like, if I'm being charitable, like kind of nothing happens. Like there's like light on action and like heavy on just like, you know,
you have to be pretty steeped in the Peter Pan mythos even get a lot of it.
If you've seen the fucking the Disney cartoon, I think you're pretty.
There's not a ton to the Peter Pan story.
Yeah, I guess.
Actually,
I will give the movie credit for not, showing a racist Tiger Lily.
Yeah.
What was Tiger Lily? The
Native Americans.
Oh, okay.
They reference it, but they don't have
Indians.
Them on screen, and that would have been awful if it was, I'm sure.
Yeah. I mean, even back in the 90s, it's probably best not to do this.
They also had Fisher Stevens play an Indian guy. Not that same Indian guy. Or not the same type of Indian, but still.
Yeah, different Indian, yeah. I mean, we brought this up on the show. I think Fisher Stevens showed up in some movie we reviewed. I legitimately thought he was, like, Middle Eastern, like, most of my life.
Yeah, it's bad, yeah. Wait a minute, that's the same guy.
And he shows up, remember, he showed up in that great episode of It's Always Sunny. He's the critic that, like, makes fun of the bar. Yeah, that's a great one. Has a joke in there that they probably wouldn't tell anymore. When he makes fun of what he ordered to drink. Anyway. All right, Sean, it will be with us momentarily, but he's got to make his grand entrance like he usually does. He's the cool one. He always shows up late, so he's fashionably late. Fashionably Sean. That's a good segment. We should do that. Fashionably Sean.
Every week, just ask him what he's wearing.
He is quite stylish, and he's all skinny now, so he wears like a lady's small. Cox, what was that old power juice or whatever? It was like, does that shirt come in men's? Do you just
power thirst?
Does your mom come in men's? I want to fuck your dad.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, what did you all watch this week, Gogs?
Not much. I watched the Yankees collapse, and that was fun for me.
You watched a baseball game.
I watched it just out of spite. Like, that's the only way you're going to get me to watch sports anymore.
Fifth inning was,
it was like a chef's kiss.
As someone that loves Schadenfreude, and I know you do, guys. I know it's one of your favorite emotions. I loved it.
This is for TJ, because, Gogs, you're not really a baseball historian. Was that like, was Freddie Freeman, did he have the best World Series in like the history of?
I mean, I don't know.
He had a home run
every
four games out of five.
Yeah, he was insane.
And then had like 12 RBIs in 5 games or something like that.
I'd have to go back because, you know, baseball is so fucking old, but like, as far as I can remember,
if he doesn't hit the home run in game, the walk-off grand slam at the bottom of the ninth, 2 outs.
Oh, that series is totally different.
In game one and the Yankees win, like, who knows what happens?
That series is totally different.
The only thing that I can think of that comes close, and I don't even know if it's the whole series or just because of the ending of it, was the Yankees Diamondbacks. Was it Luis Gonzalez?
Yeah, he had a beast of a series that season.
I know he had like the game winning hit. I think he had a tremendous series too, but like one player, usually they just start walking him.
Yeah,
they'll absolutely. We're not going to let you hit anymore.
Well, not with fucking Aaron Boone or whatever. He's just like that guy is not going to have a job next year. There's no way.
When I saw that ball bounce off Judge's glove, I was like, oh, damn.
Well, I didn't notice this in real time, but you know why he dropped it, right?
His eyes cut away.
He looked at the runner. Play. He thought he could double up the runner, so he was looking at him when the ball hit him in the hand. I loved it. Fuck the Yankees. I hate them so much.
And then Cole, or what's it, Garrett Cole not covering first. Just like
that was hysterical.
Pointing at the first base was like, what are you doing?
Also, I hate Garrett Cole too, so he's a fucking piece of shit. So I'm I hate everybody in the, I hate the Dodgers too, to be honest, because I hate what both those teams represent, because I hate
it's a real lesser of two evils.
Well, more about that tomorrow, but, it's just so annoying that like the fucking the teams that spend the most money get to the World Series. I hate that bullshit. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, yeah, you spent more money than most like third world countries. And it's like, I hate that that's rewarded. You know what I mean? It just bothers me. But what are you going to do? I do love Shohei Ohtani, though. He rocks.
He had a very weak series, though.
Yeah, he didn't have a great series. Good playoffs. Like
under 200.
He had a good
I had play. Not heard. I mean, I watch sports for spite and for money. and I made money out of my spite, so it was a win-win. But I had not heard of, is Freddie Freeman a name prior to this?
I saw something on TikTok because I didn't watch the games, but I listened to the last one on the radio, and he's like, has like the 6th best odds of current players to be in the Hall of Fame. Not including just like position players, not pitchers.
Yeah, he's very good. He's been very good for years.
It was like Trout, Harper, Machado, Altuve.
Yeah.
And he was in there. He played for Atlanta for a long time. And did he go to the Nationals for a little bit?
Yeah.
As a casual baseball observer, I just feel like I hadn't heard his name ring out like some of those other ones, so I just didn't know.
He's never been like the guy on a team. He's a very good player, but he's never been like the Braves have like two other like generational talents. So he was never like the stud, but he's been doing it long enough and his numbers are good enough that like he's probably going to be in the Hall of Fame.
So
the baseball Hall of Fame is a joke anyway.
I was wrong. He didn't play for the Nationals. He's only played for the Braves, and he won a World Series with the Braves.
Oh.
And he got two rings. He played with the Braves. He played with the Braves, and he played with the Dodgers. And his fucking, awards are insane. 8-time All-Star, 2-time World Series champion. He won the NL MVP in 2020. World Series MVP this year, 2-time MLB first team. Like, he's got a Golden Glove, 3-time Silver Slugger Award, NL Hank Aaron Award, and the Big
You don't Blue usually Award. Hear about the NHL MLB dual player.
I mean, dude is a fucking
star. And he missed like 2 months this year because his son was diagnosed with some like rare disease.
Yeah, dude, Goggs, you're right though. He doesn't have like, even though he's got like, he's that good. Like, he's not like a name. He's not like.
I've heard of Altuve. I know Mike Trout. Like, I know those other names you're saying, but like, Freddie Freeman's fun to say because it's kind of like
a great name.
Alliteration's great. Like
Freddie Freeman.
The only thing that is bad about Freddie Freeman, he lives in Canada.
Is he Canadian?
I guess he lived in Canada. I don't know. It's weird. It says he's a Canadian and American professional baseball player. What the fuck does that mean?
Dual citizenship.
But it said he's just born in L.A. So I don't. Oh. I don't know. I don't get it.
I mean, who? I don't know. Who knows?
He was born in California. Anyway, what movies did you watch, guys?
Local Boy Done Good. I only watched half of one thing, and then I needed to finish it up. Because I started late last night, and I was like, I want to watch something. And I was gone in the woods. Ugh. Fucking freezing my dick off for most of the weekend.
Yeah, you actually went out. It was like, it was finally like fall weather. You know what I mean? Like,
there was frost on our fucking tent. Like, it was like unpleasant. And, coyotes just howling all night. It was
really,
yeah. Like,
where'd you guys go?
We were in Broad Creek. We were like in Harford County. It's a place called, it's like near, the nearest town was Street, Maryland, which like get a better name, but like that, yeah.
That's like there's a place up past like Westminster. It's called Outlet. And I always thought that was a funny name for a town.
Is it one of those towns that just has like one little tiny sign? It's really like a village and not a town.
Yeah, it's right. Harford County. There's nothing in Harford County to start with. So it's probably as much of a town as you're going to get in that part of the state. But, yeah. So anywho, I was out in the wild, so I couldn't get to do a whole lot, but I did start watching and I will finish because I did not realize the cast of it. I started watching Brain Dead.
The Peter Jackson movie?
Bill Pullman. Is it a Peter Jackson movie? Bill Pullman and,
No. That's
and different. Bill Paxton.
No, I'm not thinking of the same. I mean, technically Dead Alive, its American title is original title, New Zealand title is Brain Dead.
This is.
They must have had to change it because of this movie you're talking about.
This is Bill Pullman and Bill Paxton, like a very young both of them, in this sort of weird sci-fi. Like I'm not 100% sure what's going on yet, but like I'm into it just because I'm into. It's fun to see like a young. It just makes you miss Bill Paxton. Like this is like.
Oh, he was the best, dude.
This is like great. Weird science Bill Paxton, like just a young boy. Bill Paxton, like just...
I bring this up every time we bring up Bill Paxton, but have you seen Frailty?
I still have not. No.
Oh, you need to watch that. I think you'd love it. It's like he's like a cult leader. It's really good. And he wrote and directed it.
I feel like he's a guy. I've always loved Bill Paxton, but it was like after he died, I didn't realize like how much of a talent he really was. Like I always loved him as Hudson. Like I loved Twister. Like I loved him for the quirky reasons I loved him, but then you watch like his full filmography and you're like, this guy
he's in True Romance, right? Isn't he
he's in True Lies, my favorite Schwarzenegger film.
Doesn't he play like he's like the weaselly little like
he's the fake spy. He's like trying to romance. Yeah, he's trying to romance Jamie Lee Curtis, my favorite Lee Curtis. So
he's like, oh God, I got a tiny.
That's right.
What a spy piss
himself, man.
All over
God, I love that. That movie is solid so movie. Much. Like, that it's not the best tremendous. Schwarzenegger movie, but it's my favorite. And it is so good. I love that movie. But yeah, I'm going to continue watching this. I'll have a full report on everyone's desk, next week.
Thank you. you guys didn't hear this before the show started, but Gogs is saying that, we're like we have to run this podcast like a full on business. So we now have an HR department.
I'm really worried about our IRS audits, quite frankly.
Oh no.
don't worry. I deduct everything. There's no taxes due.
You have to. Like we've generated nothing but negative equity.
What would Sean's business position be in the company?
Diversity hire.
Fair enough.
Classic DI,
he's our DEI.
Yeah, DEI, classic DEI hire.
Yep. Keep the lids off our back.
He used to be Hispanic, but then he was black. I don't know. One day.
I don't know. One day he decided.
What voice are you going to use today?
One day Sean said he was white, then he was Puerto Rican. Which is it? I if I could digress for 1 second, I love that Trump doesn't understand the concept of biracial people, by the way. That just blows my fucking mind.
Gotta be pure as the driven snow.
I know, right? Also, I'm pretty sure he has, like, biracial grandchildren, but anyway, that's besides
anywho, the point. Anywho, but that's everything I watched. Sean, welcome aboard.
Oh, shit. That's me.
Yeah.
I watched some stuff. I'll try to keep
you
up.
Sean, you missed Gogs watched the World Series. We talked about baseball for 15 minutes.
Oh, my God.
Out of spite.
Oh, you know what? Let me pose Alex's question to Sean, because, Sean, you're a little bit more trivia, sports trivia-minded than myself. Is Freddie Freeman's World Series performance the best World Series performance in history to your memory? Because it was pretty ridiculous.
Hit two home runs in three straight in the first three games.
Four out of five games.
Four out of five, he had a home run. And I think one of those was a fucking
every game.
Game-winning grand slam in the first one.
Yeah, I mean, moment-wise, I think that grand slam's got to go up because it was the first game. Maybe not so much like the Kurt Gibson home run. And like, I don't know. I guess the better question is what's iconic anymore? Are we still at a point where things are even iconic when there was four channels and everybody watched the same thing? Everything's so fractured.
That's a fair point.
I would say Bonds had a really good World Series and a loss. Like it's probably up there. I'm struggling to think of one.
Yeah, me too. That's how I was. I felt the same way. Anyway, sorry, continue.
Yeah, I watched, I'll try and be quick. I watched, I can't remember what it's called. It's, Woman of the Year? What the fuck is
it? Oh, you watched that, the horror movie, Anna Kendrick, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
It's like kind of a thriller. It's fine.
The dating game show?
Yeah, yeah. Or movie? It's, you know, loosely based on a true story and, it's fine. It's just kind of meandering. I don't know. I've seen better versions of the movie. I watched the Will and forgive me. I forget what it's called. Will and Harper. Harper and Will. The Will Ferrell documentary about.
I love that. What did you think?
I thought I was talking to TJ about it. Like I thought it was really sweet. I found it a little bit plodding, and I almost feel like it would have worked better as a scripted movie. To be honest, because, you know, it's a documentary. I think TJ's the one that said this, but I always think about it. He's like, the best documentaries are ones that are ostensibly about one thing, but they kind of are really about something else. Uh-huh. This one's just kind of about what it's meant to be about, which is not a criticism, but I don't know. Like, it's hard to put myself in the shoes of the person watching the documentary, because if one of you guys transition, I'd be like, okay, well, I knew you liked Dick. That's fine. And that would be the end of the conversation. But I guess for some people, it's a little bit more like curiosity inducing. I don't know. Like it was fine. I thought it was skippable. I don't know. It didn't grab me in any particular way. What did grab me was that she just could not get her hair under control. Harper, she wore this front clip in it. And it was like, man, like, fix your hair, lady. Like, it's bad.
It reminded me of the nerd girl and Malcolm in the Middle, whose hair was just always a disaster.
I know. Exactly.
Or like the girl in Napoleon Dynamite that he did all the crap in his locker.
The shoulder pads.
It's a perfectly cromulent documentary. It's sweet. Like, its heart's in the right place. It's just like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just really picky about documentaries. Speaking of things I'm not picky about, though, I did watch Venom, The Last Dance.
Oh, hell yeah.
Hell yeah. horsey.
How hard was it for you not to do the voice the entire time while you're watching the movie?
Very difficult. I was in a movie theater with two other people.
So I've heard this movie is boring as hell. That's what the general consensus of the movie is, that it's not goofy like the last one was.
The problem is, I love the movie because I have to love the movie. If the movie is just about the relationship between this autistic man and his manic pixie dream boy, which is really what the movie to me is about, all that's great. Like Tom Hardy, say what you want about Tom Hardy. I don't know that anybody has a negative view of him, but we he all commits to shit.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's like, I'm in. I'm doing this fucking movie. And, but it suffers from the scale problem of comic book movies, and I guess because it's the last one.
Yeah.
It's like another, you know, universe level or universe extinction level event, and I don't need that. I don't care.
Don't care.
It's funny that they introduce this villain and he doesn't even interact with anybody in the movie. Like, he just sits in a throne, and they cut back to him a couple times. He never even lifts his head up.
I heard some terrible, I don't know if this is true, so you gotta take this with a grain of salt, but I heard that they introduced him because Fox wants to make all of those awful Venom-verse people like an Avengers movie to fight that guy.
Yeah, count me out.
Yeah, who wants that?
Not for Sean.
Yeah.
That's NFS Turbo, not for Sean Turbo. I love the dynamic. Believe it or not, the ending is actually kind of emotionally affecting just because I'm invested in Tom Hardy and Venom, which is not a statement I thought I would have to make, not in open court. You know what I'm saying?
Is there closure? Is there like a definitive end to this thing? Is it truly the last dance?
But they have to put a stinger in it. You know what I mean? They can't just let it be sad.
Wait, Eddie.
Yeah, they introduce it like a Chekhov's goo thing at the beginning. It's like, okay, well, they can backdoor their way out of this if Tom Hardy decides like he wants to make another one of these movies.
Is Tom Hardy like the anti Jared Leto? Like, they both commit to things all the way, but he does it in a sincere, fond way.
How dare you compare the two of those people?
No, I mean that like
is he the anti what?
Jared Leto.
You mean by overly committing to shit but not being the worst person?
A piece of shit about it. Yes. Yes.
Yes. I pick it up what you're putting down. Yeah.
Like, because Jared Leto, he dives all the way in.
Well, you know what? I don't know, because Jared Leto dives all the way into movies that are good.
Right.
Morbius.
I don't think he tried very hard in Morbius. I do not blame them. Let me put that on Front Street. Like, don't try for Morbius.
I think he tried really hard with Joke to be a Joker. I would say
he leaned all the way in there. He loved it. Yeah. That was his like fucking passion project. He celebrated that one.
Hope you guys like use condoms.
Right. I was about to say, didn't they?
Goofy things.
He's like, I'm so dark and twisted.
Yeah.
I can't remember like the Twitter account, but it was
they pushed the dishwasher button that said normal in the dream sequence, which is supposed to represent what she wants, which is to be normal.
Oh, there was a Twitter account for a while that was like, it was like Jared Leto's Joker, and it was just like, I go to the grocery store and I only shop in the dented can section. So fucking fun. It was like the to you the fries at Arby's are crazy, to me they're normal.
Like, I would say Venom 3, watch it if you've watched the other two and you just
enjoy. Oh, I'm gonna watch it. It's gonna be hard to top the second one, because I love the second one.
I legitimately love the second movie, and it's a smaller movie.
Yeah, and it's got some of the most baffling editing choices I've ever seen in a fucking film. Like, I think I watched it with Gogs, and I was like literally falling off the couch and laughing at it.
Bro, the scene where fucking he's just like at the rave with all the glow Eddie sucks. Like, nice costume, guy. Like, how'd you make yourself 14 feet tall?
Suddenly we're in like the Fist of the North Star universe, and guys are just 15 feet tall walking around. It's cool.
Yeah, like the first movie is kind of stupid on accident. The second movie's like, oh, this is stupid, let's lean into it. And the third one is in this weird mid spot. But on the movie's defense, it is strictly 1.5 hours long, and they're not playing around. Like, we're getting
out. I'm fine with that.
Unlike our feature presentation.
Anything else, Mr. Sean?
No, that was it. I don't know who went, so you guys are going to have to
tell me. So you pick, you give the, TJ or
second,
Alec.
You were the choice. Second person.
Let's go with potato salad.
Fielder's choice.
Alec, that's you, by the way.
Okay, how did you not know that was Alec?
Okay. Yeah, that's my initials. I should have known.
I love potato salad.
Show me potato salad. Right.
I watched four things.
Four things?
After talking about it on the show last week or the week before, I watched Eurotrip.
Oh, I remember liking that movie.
Oh, my.
It's a perfectly fine early aughts teen sex comedy. Like, none of those people perfectly have gone on to do anything else except for Matt Damon. And he was popular before that. None of the lead actors have done dick since then. But it's fun.
Isn't one of those guys on one of those fucking cop shows, like, that's on CBS? Longer-haired guy.
I would have no idea about that.
Isn't Fred Armisen in that movie? Isn't he the Excoozy guy?
Yeah,
isn't that him?
He's in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that doesn't count. He's barely in the movie.
They still make teen sex romps.
Yeah, they're just like not as funny.
Hmm.
Oh, I'm sorry, Alec. Real quick, because you said Fred Armisen. I watched all of The Last Man on Earth. It was pretty good.
That's a good show.
Go ahead.
I thought that I didn't finish it. But then I went to the Hulu page, and turns out I did finish it. They just ended it, like, it got canceled abruptly. Like, it was not wrapped up at all.
Say that again? Sean, we lost you there, buddy.
Uh-oh.
Oh. All right, go ahead, Alec. Sean right. drove off a cliff. He's You're like Toonsie the cat. Remember that?
Nope. Eurotrip.
It's Tootsies, you dumb fuck.
That's what did I say? That's what I said.
You said Tootsie.
Oh.
What were you saying about Last Man on Earth, Sean? You got broke up.
You got cut off, yeah.
Oh, it's like they got canceled in the middle of shooting the episode. It just ends.
Yeah.
Jesus.
It ends like with them making plans about what to do. Like, but then it's just over. No, I watched all that when I loved that show.
Yeah, it was really good.
It was very dark, like super dark at points. Like it's top, like it must have just been did it just get re-released on something? Cause like it's popping up all over my TikTok, like little clips from it, like crazy. So it must have just shown up on one of the streamies. Again.
Yeah, I saw it on Hulu. I don't know if it was before or not, but.
But no, like those episodes with, Jason Sudeikis in it are like fucking rough. Or at least the last one he's in. Anyway, I watched the Ghostbusters Afterlife.
You've already seen that.
I like that movie.
Yeah, I like that movie. It's much better than the Frozen whatever one that came out last year. That movie sucks.
I still haven't seen that one.
But Afterlife is fun. It's a good time. And everybody's having a blast.
That was a lot better than any right to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I had no expectations for it, but I ended up thinking it was a lot of fun. And some of that probably just rides on the fact that Paul Rudd can elevate almost anything to a certain extent.
He's good too.
Watched a new Apple TV movie called The Instigators.
The Instigators?
Yeah. I thought it was pretty good. Directed by Doug Liman.
Oh, the James Bond guy. Or no, Born Identity.
Yeah, Born Identity, Live, Die, Repeat.
Swingers?
No, that was...
Was that John Favreau?
That was Favreau.
No, he wrote it.
He didn't direct it.
Oh, yeah.
Sean's right.
Swingers. God, Edge of Tomorrow came out 10 years ago. Fuck off. Anyway, he also directed Roadhouse. Anyway.
That's right.
Shout out.
It's got Matt Damon, Casey Affleck. I think Casey Affleck wrote it. Alfred Molina, Michael Starlbjerg. But the only thing I remember him from is one of the seasons of Fargo. He plays Ewan McGregor's like second in command of his company. Ron Perlman is in it. Toby Jones is in it. It's a heist movie.
I like that.
But the heist.
Who's Toby Jones? Wait, why am I? Which one's Toby?
You know Toby Jones.
I know the name. Armin Zola and
got it.
Captain America movies.
Right. Or a poor man's Clint Howard.
Yeah, sure. If that helps. happened. I liked it a lot. I thought it was a lot of fun. It's a heist movie. The heist happens in the first like 10 minutes of the movie. And then after that, it's, the guys who did the heist, like trying to figure out how to escape and kind of get away with it. Cause things went haywire during the heist. And then they're just kind of like traipsing along through Boston for the rest of the movie. Affleck and Damon both get to take their Boston accents, which I guess is a kind of normal accents for a
that's always fun.
Really long walk. I thought it was pretty fun. I enjoyed it a lot. Casey Affleck's kind of a piece of shit person, but he's a really good actor.
It kills me because I usually love him in movies, but like yeah, in real life he sucks. It's like Alan, I mean he's in.
Alan, have you ever seen Gone Baby Gone?
Oh, I love that movie.
Oh, that movie's so fucking
good. Is that the one with Ben Affleck? With,
No.
That's Gone Girl, I think.
I'm thinking of Gone Girl.
But Ben Affleck directed Gone Baby Gone with Casey.
No, I have not seen that. I know I've heard of it before, and I get that confused with Gone
really
Girl
good.
All the time.
Yeah,
it's really
good. Like
Gone
accents.
Girl flipped it around, right? Gone Girl was Casey directing Ben?
Did Casey direct that?
No. Wait.
David Fincher.
Gone Girl is David Fincher. Yeah.
Pardon.
You're fine.
Just pardon? Making shit up.
Pardon? You'll have a pardon? Sack of homo milk.
Oh boy. The last thing I watched is a new 3-part documentary on Netflix called The Comeback, which is about the 2004 Boston Red Sox.
Oh shit.
It's really good. I fucking loved it.
Yeah.
It chronicles the whole 2003 season and all the way through like the ALCS where fucking Aaron Boone hit the, 3-run home run to win it in like game 6. And then all the shit that went on that off season and then the whole like 2004 season all the way through the, just like their actual World Series win that year, it pretty much culminated with the ALCS. The World Series was like an afterthought almost because they finally beat the Yankees.
I remember that shit.
But it's like real good. Fucking, and there's,
it's like the fucking Miracle on Ice. Everybody remembers the silver medal game, like or the Russian game that actually go beat Finland or whatever the next round.
Yeah,
that's true. Yeah, good example.
I thought it was really good. Like, I forgot all about, like, that A-Rod shit the winter before. I remembered it, but didn't remember that it happened, like, between those two seasons.
Right.
With him being traded to the Red Sox, and then the league or the Players Association vetoed it. So then he got traded to the Yankees. Like, this shit's crazy.
I only remember
to think about, like, the Players Association vetoing a trade. Like, are you kidding me?
They bring that shit up all the time in, like, baseball, YouTube. You know what I mean? Like,
But it's really good. And it's got a lot of good interviews with people. Kevin Millar's in it a whole bunch. And Kevin Millar's.
Kevin Millar.
Yeah. Millar.
Millar.
He's, I'm sure if you talked to him about his political views, you wouldn't be too happy with him.
No.
But he like, just like talking about the games and like series and shit, like he is so still to this day, like so like enthused about it. And like has so much like energy about it. They're interviewing him about, so they talked to him about the Nomar Garcia Parra and A-Rod. And like somebody's interviewing him and they show the interview and they say something about getting A-Rod and they're like, would you rather A-Rod or Nomar? And Nomar was still on the team at this point. He's like, well, A-Rod, he's like the best player in the world.
Right.
And then apparently he like didn't remember. He acted or he either didn't or act like he didn't remember his answer. And he's like, I still to this day don't know why Nomar was mad at me. And then they replay the interview for him. He's like, oh, well, yeah, it'd probably be pretty bad too if somebody said that about me.
That's funny.
It's really good though. And like 30 for 30 had a really good episode called 4 Days in October that came out probably, I don't know, a decade ago. That was really good. But this is like, it's stretched out and drawn out because it's a 3-hour thing, not just a quick like 40-minute episode. But if you like baseball, I think it's really good.
I love baseball.
I know we're not super Yankees or Red Sox fans, but back then, I still cheered for the Red Sox.
Yeah, I was going to say, you still got probably some residual Red Sox fans in you.
They were lovable losers back then. They weren't
the obnoxious,
annoying fan base that they are now.
Also, growing up where we grew up, it's like our intense hatred for both of those teams, I think, is compelling. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, I remember everything about them. Also, it just occurred to me everything you watched had somebody last name Damon involved, because you had Johnny Damon and then Matt Damon and every other thing.
Oh, yeah. Johnny Damon.
Also,
I remember after he went to the Yankees.
Kevin Millar played for the Orioles briefly, too.
Yeah, he did. He went Damon went to the Yankees. They had shirts printed in Boston that one of my uncles had one. Said, looks like Jesus, acts like Judas, throws like Mary.
That rules.
You know what I want? Do you guys remember? I'm sure one of you guys remembers. Do you remember when Cito Gaston managed the All-Star game and didn't put Messina in? And everybody had those Cito Sucks t-shirts in Baltimore. I wish I could find one of those.
Yeah, that would be sick to have.
But that's everything I watched. Who's left? TJ?
Yep, just little old me.
Damn, we're going long today. TJ.
That's what she said. I watched two things. Technically, I guess you could say I watched three things, but two things. Really? No, nobody?
Two things?
Slacking. Thank you, Jesus. The first thing I watched was I finally got a chance to watch the entire version of Kill Bill. So the whole bloody affair. So it's Kill Bill, but it's not split up in volume one and two. It is Quentin Tarantino's full vision for the film. Because he originally
Didn't you used to have to go to his movie theater and watch a certain amount of movies to unlock the DLC to watch that movie?
Yes. You still can do that, actually. You can still, if you watch, you have to watch all of his films and then you can watch Kill Bill with minus Kill Bill. You have to watch all of his movies and then you get a punch card and then you can watch, the whole bloody affair. That's what he calls the whole Kill Bill thing. I think I kind of built this cut of this movie up in my head a lot because I've read about it for years and years and years. And I mean, I really like Kill Bill a lot and I like the movie, but I was kind of let down because there's not really a lot extra to it.
Is there anything different or is it just a 4-hour movie?
I mean, so here's the thing. I can't sit there.
Is it restitched? Is it
No.
Is it sequentially different? Oh, it's just sewn together.
No, it's, you gotta understand, he never wanted to make it two parts. He was kind of forced to make it two parts. The way it's cut, that wasn't, that's just the fucking movies. You know what I mean? It's not we talk about this a lot, but it's not like that weird thing that they did with The Godfather when they put it on TV and they turned it into The Godfather Saga and they fucking changed around the order and shit, made it chronological.
They took part one and part two and they married it up. Yeah.
You remember what I'm talking about, Gogs? You know, where they
where they took Godfather part two and you had Vito Corleone coming to America. Then you had Godfather and then you had the rest of Godfather part two.
But, the thing is that, I've always, cause he's talked about it a lot. Michael Jai White was in Kill Bill, but they cut his scenes. He's in a segment where he's a kung fu fighter and Pai Wei, the guy, that trains, Beatrice.
I believe his name is Pai Mei. You are thinking of
the delicious Chinese fast food chain.
Yeah, you think about P.F. Chang's Light, I believe is what you were
still pretty
about.
Good. Anyway, so he's he killed my master, so I have to fight him. That still didn't make, that's in, if you have the Kill Bill DVDs or Blu-rays, you can watch that deleted scene. It's out there on the internet. So I assumed that was going to be in the full cut of the movie. Nope, it still didn't make the cut. Poor Michael Jai White, always getting the shaft. Because apparently, by the way, his character in the Dark Knight was supposed to be way more, and that got cut too. So Michael Jai White always getting cut in these big fucking feature films that he's barely in.
But no, got all a Spawn though, so you know.
I mean, we all. This is a pro Michael Jai White podcast, but the thing is that the only like, and again, what I was gonna say is that I mean, I've seen Kill Bill a bunch, but I really haven't seen it in a long time, so I couldn't tell you, like, if there's like slightly extended scenes or like, there's not really much noticeable that's added. The biggest thing that I noticed is the scene in part one where she kills all the crazy 88. You know, that's in black and white in the theatrical version.
Was that an MPAA requirement?
Yes, that's another thing that Tarantino didn't want. And so that's all in color. And apparently, I went back and looked on the internet after I watched it. There's apparently like more limbs that get cut off and stuff, but like again, you don't really notice while it's happening. But overall, I mean, I think that movie is great. I think it kind of works better as one long movie. There is one big change that I did notice. So the end of Kill Bill Part One, when when Beatrice like mutilates that like assistant of Bill's and to send a message to Bill. There's a line that the movie ends on where Bill goes, does she know the baby's still alive? Well, that's not in this cut. So when you see the kid, when you run into the kid at the end of the second part, it's a lot more impactful because you're not you know what I mean? Like, I know I expected it, but like as in a thematic way, like I think it's more interesting. I think those movies are great. I still think that the second part kind of drags. Like, I think the ending is really good, and I like a lot of what the second one does, but, like,
in the first part that it's like nothing's going to live up to that.
Well, that's the problem, right? The first part is too front-loaded with action, where, like, the second one, like, I really like the burial scene, and I like her training and stuff, and I think the ending in Kill Bill 2 is fucking perfect. Like, pure, perfectly written Tarantino shit. Like, and I like the subversion of, you know, you think there's going to be this big duel between Bill and Beatrice, and it's this, like, long conversation, which I think is really well written. I don't know, it's great. If you're a fan, if you're, like, a diehard fan of Tarantino like I am, I would watch the full version just to say you watched it. Like, I enjoyed it. I think, like, in the future, if I want to go back and watch Kill Bill, it's perfectly fine to watch it in part one and part two because it is 3.5 hours long. So
they did it with the Matrix sequel. They did it with this. Do you think they'll ever do that again where they make a whole movie and release it separately that close together? Because both of those sets of movies came out, I think, within 6 months of each other.
Well, that was before that, but like Lord of the Rings was all shot.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings was real fast.
But that was before that. Back to back like that.
No, you're right. It got released like yearly. I don't know. I mean, maybe, but I don't know. I mean, especially with the way movies are made nowadays and how much money shit's put in, I don't know. It's tough. I feel like with our attention spans now with movies too, like, I don't know if it'll ever work. I don't know. Tarantino, like, you know, say what you want about the guy. But he did do a lot of things that were like super unconventional that like Grindhouse like didn't work out, like financial failure. But we lost Alec. Like Grindhouse was a financial failure, but like a cool experiment and one of those things where I was really happy to see it like in its full version in the theater. Like that was a very cool singular movie experience.
I don't know if anybody else had this experience where, like, they loved Planet Terror and didn't like Death Proof that much and then totally flip-flopped. Like
that happened. That happened to me. I was very pro Planet Terror. And I was like, I didn't have the affinity for, like, or the affection for, like, what Tarantino was trying to do with Death Proof. Like, I didn't have that frame of reference. Like, I liked goofy zombie movies, so what, like, Planet Terror kind of spoke to me, but then, like, I was like, what, like, I'd understand, like, the whole vibe, and now...
Vanishing Point,
never saw Vanishing Point, right? Like, I didn't, like, but now, like, I don't care for Planet Terror, really, And yeah, I think Death Proof's a ton of fun.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with both of you. I feel the same way. But anyway, so that was that. And then I watched a movie that I've literally been meaning to watch for about 20 years, Paris, Texas. It's a fucking masterpiece. I think it's arguably one of the best movies I've ever seen in my entire life. I think it is incredible. It looks, I said this earlier today, but to me, Paris, Texas is a movie that, like, without getting too philosophical about it, it is a movie that expresses everything that can be done in a fucking movie. The movie is beautiful. It's acted amazing. The movie tells you so much with so little. Like, a lot of the storytelling is done through, like, fucking colors. Like, I don't know. I think it's amazing. It's a movie, if you're not familiar, it's a movie that came out in 1985. It's about a man, what's his, oh my God, why can't I think of his fucking name? Harry Dean Stanton. Harry Dean Stanton is this kind of, like, wanderer in the desert. You find him wandering the desert, and he passes out, and this guy takes him in, and he's like an amnesiac. He doesn't remember who he is, or he's mute. He doesn't say anything. And then his brother, is called, because they find his ID in his wallet. His brother is called, who's played by, oh my God, what am with me in names? The fucking Blue Velvet.
Harry Dean Morgan?
No, very close to that though. Dean Stockwell from Quantum Leap and Blue Velvet. Dean Stockwell is his brother, also a great actor. Like, all the acting in this movie, 10 out of 10. So his brother comes to pick him up, and you find out from his brother that he has been missing for 4 years, like, and he had a whole life, like, he had a wife and a kid, and then he just disappeared, and you don't know why. And again, like, the brother is mute and doesn't say anything, and eventually he starts talking, and it's this, I don't want to give too much away, because it's a fucking powerhouse movie, but, like, it's a story about a guy that is trying to run away from his past, like, quite literally run away from his past. And then you watch him try to reinvent himself into a person that he thinks he's supposed to be. And then ultimately understanding that at the end of the day, he's still who he is. And the best he can do is just try to get better, but he's still going to have to leave everything that he loves because he's still, like, deeply flawed on the inside. It's just an incredibly powerful movie. This whole movie hinges on this scene between him and his estranged wife that happens. His estranged wife has started working at this, like, peep show where there's, like, this partition between the person and the performer. And he talks to her on the phone, but his back is turned to her. And again, it's like two-way glass, but the way it's shot is just so good. And this scene goes on, the penultimate scene in this movie goes on for like 15 minutes. And apparently they did this whole thing in one fucking take. And it's just, it is so amazing because it ties together so much of this movie. Like, you don't really understand what happened between them and what happened 4 years ago that made them split apart. And in the course of this one fucking soul-crushing scene, they lay it all out there, and it works. And it's just so fucking, like, sad and just, I mean, I was blown away. And again, like, the look of this movie is something else. Like, it looks beautiful. Like, they just put a 4K restoration of this out. Like, I might actually have to break out the fucking 4K Blu-ray player and buy it. It looks so fucking good. The film's use of color and its sparse use of music, it's just, I mean, this movie, I've heard about this movie in fucking film head circles for, like, most of my life. And I've never gotten the chance to watch it or made the time to watch it. It's a fucking a 20 out of 10. This movie is absolutely incredible. Like, amazing. Harry Dean Stanton, rest in peace. The guy was a fucking, like, powerhouse, like, unbelievably good movie. Can't recommend it enough. You like sad man movies? This is, like, probably the best sad man movie I've ever seen. So yeah, That's what I watch. Paris, Texas. Watch it, like, immediately. It's a fucking masterpiece. But that's all.
Well, now we get to talk about another sad man.
Yeah, this is kind of, this is a sad boy
Peter,
man.
Peter Banning.
Yeah. Who is this movie for? Like, is this a kid's movie? Is this a movie for sad men? Is this, like, Jingle All the Way did this better.
One. It was a kid. It was definitely a kid's movie.
It was a kid. It was a kid's
opening. About 30 times.
It was a kid's movie.
The opening salvo of this movie hits you
When you were a kid and you watched it 30 times, does that mean you just finished watching it 10 minutes ago? Because Jesus Christ, why is this movie fucking long?
I remember vividly, I had the sword. I had the Peter Pan sword, the toy. I had the toy, the hook sword.
Yeah.
And they had Happy Meal toys. I remember that.
I had the cereal.
They had a terrible NES game, a not too bad arcade game though.
I don't remember the arcade game at all.
I think this was on a heavy rotation of borrowing it from the Carroll County Public Library.
So I was Carroll County Public Library.
On VHS. Carroll County Public Library, back at, once again, if we want to talk, just if I can, a brief tangent before we talk about this film. My love of movies starts at the Carroll County Public Library when I walked up to the desk and I was like, how many VHS tapes can I check out at one time? And the woman looked me dead in the eye and said 12. And I said, perfect. And I just took, and no one gave a shit. Like, 11-year-old me, I got like Pulp Fiction. Reservoir Dogs
from that library. Yeah.
Reservoir Dogs from that library. I was like, I know what those two words mean. I have no idea what this movie's about. And it's one of my favorite movies of all time.
I like dogs.
Yeah. Like, and reservoirs are bodies of water. And I was like, cool. Aliens. Forrest Gump.
I don't want to turn into like an old man in nostalgia podcast, but there's something like magical about VHS tapes, especially from the library. Like gave him the card and it's like, it didn't matter. Like it was free.
Yeah.
And just the sound of it and just putting it in and just letting the, and then the FBI warning and a couple of previews and then you're in it, man. And you're ready to fucking watch Platoon at 10 years old for some reason. But yeah, like I don't know, because like, you know, I didn't have a ton of friends growing up, so my friends over the summer were just 12 movies a week from the Carroll County Public Library. So anyway, shout out CC Fia. Anywho, Steven Spielberg's Hook.
Yep.
Sean, I said this before you got on here. I'm a movie I can't necessarily. I think I've got too much. I wore that tape out. I think I can't objectively. I know it's not. I know the movie has problems, but I will have rose-colored glasses for it. So I'm just throwing that out there right now.
But well, that's good because I've never seen this movie, so like I had zero nostalgia for it.
So you got through. So this is kind of like when I watched Top Gun for the first time, and I'd never seen it.
I don't know if this tracks, but my hook was Dick Tracy. That was my
same kid though.
Turned into a movie.
Didn't we like Dick Tracy, didn't we?
Loved it.
Like
yeah,
we did. Yeah.
But the kid was also Peter Banning's kid. Those are his two movies.
Oh no shit. Yeah.
Charlie Corsmo.
Yeah.
Corso's son.
I looked him up and it said actor and lawyer. I was like, it's funny. It's a funny thing to say.
Chunk became a lawyer too. So,
what's his name's lawyer?
Yeah.
Trump's lawyer?
Kehi Kwan or whatever. Very much looking forward to his new movie too. Anyway.
Oh, speaking of Kehi Kwan, like how good does that movie look with him and Marshawn Lynch? I'm super excited.
Fucking wait. I'm so excited for that movie.
That looks really good.
Anyway. So Hook.
Hook.
We learn about, in Hook, the Peter Pan story exists. And you find out that, so you're introduced to Peter Banning, played by Robin Williams, and he's kind of bouncing between a slightly subdued Robin Williams, and then he gets into full Robin Williams a little later.
Well, he doesn't start doing impressions at any point.
No, he's a, oh, hmm, yeah.
That sounded like what Robert Williams does a Vincent Price impression.
It was pretty good.
You know what the kid, what else the kid was in? Can't Hardly Wait.
Oh shit.
No kidding.
Is he
the lead in that?
No, that's Ethan Embry. He gets like drunk with the football player and then the football player goes to jail for him for some reason. I can't remember what.
Oh, okay.
But he said that.
Can't hardly remember.
Slightly older than.
You get in there and you tell Barry Manilow exactly how you feel.
I fucking love that movie.
Can't hardly remember. That got me. Oh, Can't Hardly Wait rocks.
So anyway. Peter Banning, absentee father, corporate raider. He's in Murders and Executions. The movie opens with a play of Peter Pan where his daughter is playing Wendy, and it's just pan on pan on pan in this movie. My man is having a 1991 $5 billion deal, which in 1991 must have been like $1 trillion. It was just like he could have purchased the sun for whatever this was. And as a result, he can't make it to Dick Tracy's kids' baseball game. So he sends somebody with a camcorder to
to the game like 5 minutes before he does.
Just watch his son choke.
Cracked me up because it reminded me of Arrested Development where they have the surrogate.
Walk
around with the camera on their head.
That's Super Dave Osborne.
Hey, I didn't say that.
It was at this point in the movie where I thought out loud, when are they going to get to the fireworks factory? I had no patience for any of this.
When is the Peter going to start panning?
Right.
So when the Banning starts panning is when we go to London.
We also learned that his son can't hit a curveball. So him and Serrano from Major League.
You're trying to tell me Jesus Christ can't hit a curveball?
I know I texted you guys, but what fucking 10-year-old is throwing a fucking curveball?
Well, they actually outlawed curveballs in Little League within the recent past because like 9-year-olds are getting fucking Tommy John surgery. Yeah, because they're all blowing out their fucking elbows.
I mean, it's not.
At least you get that.
It used to be a proper country. Yeah.
It's not funny, but it's still kind of funny.
So Peter Panning is scared of heights. Fucking transcontinental flight.
Peter Banning on his way to start Peter Panning flying across the ocean at a Pan Am.
His son draws a picture of the plane's demise and doesn't give his dad a parachute. And then they end up.
At this kid, you know he's gonna suck at baseball. So like, I wouldn't.
Have the build.
No, not at all.
And that's the fire. So anyway.
Crash kid.
So now,
would not recommend. 3 out of 10 kid.
They end up at Dame Maggie Smith's house and you find out.
You know, she was like 52 in this movie and they made her look
She
made her look like a trillion. Well, no, she was like her 90 something birthday or whatever.
Have you guys seen the meme with fucking Danny Glover from Lethal Weapon 2? And he was like 42 when that movie came out.
Like 35 and he's too old.
Oh my god.
Too
old for this shit. Yeah.
So you're 7 years younger than me. So anyway, she's 96. So they gifted her an orphanage and there's a big deal about that. And you find out that Peter was an orphan. He like, snuck into the window one night, a la Jean-Claude Van Damme from Kickboxer, and they take him in, and he marries a girl who wasn't an orphan but was Dame Maggie Smith's granddaughter. And now they're doing this, and he's a corporate radar, and she calls him a pirate.
When they show her...
Did you say corporate radar?
Yes. Continue, Alec.
Okay.
when they show her through the years getting older.
Yeah.
One of those first shots is a Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Best work of her career.
And then Gwyneth Paltrow runs it back later.
Shakespeare in Love.
So now I know we're probably going to get into it later, but isn't it a little weird that Peter Pan, it literally felt like that scene that when Mr. Burns was like, he goes back to see his old girlfriend, but decides to date her 20-year-old daughter instead. It's kind
of
weird.
No, it's very problematic.
This whole movie has a lot of problems. I texted TJ Analog. I was like, they should just remake this, but make it the Jeffrey Epstein story.
Yeah. Like, he kisses a sleepy girl and then marries her.
Oh, yeah. And he just, like, straight up in front of her grandmother, like, I'm going to kiss that bitch. And yeah. Like, he's she's like, well, don't. He's like, no, I mean, like, a real kiss. I'm really going to get in there.
Like, he's like, we're talking about sexual assault. Anywho.
It's a little weird.
So now, where are we? Okay. They give this old lady an orphanage. We find out that everyone's like, were you really Wendy? And it's, yeah, it's our family's history. We have a history of fairy stuff. And then, meanwhile, I guess, so somehow, and I never questioned it as a kid. I did question a little bit in this viewing. There is an information system where Never Neverland can keep running tabs of actual facts that happen in the real world.
The
political situation in Neverland is troubling, especially when, like, he destabilizes all of it and turns it over to the child Mujahideen.
Yeah, like, there's like a steel dossier level amount of information being passed around about Peter Banning and his children through a network of information by barely literate pirates. Like, how is this a thing? One of which is David Crosby, the other of which is Glenn Close. Now that they're
making me think about, like, how Neverland actually works, and it's not just like Wonderland. It's like, what are they pirating and from whom? If all the adults are pirates.
All the adults are pirates or prostitutes.
Correct.
Which are just pirates for penis. And
how does anything work there? Like, are they just singing sea shanties?
I don't think it's a pirating economy per se. I think it's more like, think of it like a purgatory-esque save state where you're just sort of the in-between zone and nothing ever changes.
That's horrible.
But there is some kind of structure.
There is, but they're like the structure is just a constant warring. I don't know where you get fresh pirates. I don't know where you get fresh,
they get
lost
the fresh
boys.
Children. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Right. I don't know.
They get
whence.
Lost. They just fall in there somehow.
Like when this
but
when Peter Pan
where,
runs
again,
away
where do
in
the adults
a bassinet.
Come from?
Here's another part. The part where the baby is coming to grips with his own mortality, so it induces gravity to run away from his mother on a hill in the bassinet was kind of wild. Like you're talking about a 6-month-old baby. Understand what was the line that Big Business says in The Crow? He's like, the day you learn you're gonna die is when you become a man.
It's my favorite thing Gog's ever said about movie reviews, talking about Lone Wolf and Cub. He said, when the men were men and the babies were also men.
it's the truth in this one. That movie rocks. So Captain Hook has gotten Captain James Hook, played by the incomparable Dustin Hoffman. And let me also say this before we get too far into it. I could just eat Bob Hoskins up with biscuits. I love this man. Everything he's ever done.
I mean, Bob Hoskins. Bob Hoskins is trying his ass off in this
watch
movie.
The really? Long Good Friday.
Is that going to hurt my Hoskins?
No. It's a proto Guy Ritchie movie.
God, I love Bob Hoskins. The man rules. Anyway. And Smee is one of my favorite Hoskinses. So anyway, so now James Hook has figured out that PETA is back. And I guess the pocket dimension, which is Neverland, can only really directly go to this one window in London. So
they
teleport in during the orphanage ceremony. The children are stolen away through a series of magic and pirates. There's an old man, Toodles, who was a lost boy, who's lost his marble. He's just useless. There's some other lady who's just there, and she got bopped on the head. But her
oh my
long
God.
Reading of the children were screaming is kind of horrifying.
I remember that line.
What a mother wants to hear.
Like, that bothered me as a kid. I remember, like, you.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
It's creepy.
Problem being at this point, if you do your movie, the podcast, and pause the movie, they've got the Neverland. It has been 1 hour, and there is still an entire feature film left at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It takes them an hour to get to Neverland. Yeah. So now Phil Big Tom's Collins shows up, and he...
My favorite part of the movie, Phil Collins.
He takes a statement and then just lets them live in an active crime scene.
Right.
Just let them just be... The mom is catatonic. Peter Pan starts drinking heavy, and then a tarted up Julia Roberts flies.
Oh, tarted.
I heard. Jesus.
That's
she is heard also the different. Other thing.
Wait, what did I say?
Is this the movie where supposedly she was such a cunt that, like, they had to wrangle her? Okay.
Yes.
Is that right? I didn't know that.
Like, she was miserable. Apparently, she was miserable because... She was kept separate from everybody else.
Yeah.
Cause well, she's tiny. She's in the CGI in that clock. All the time. But yeah. She made it her mission to make everybody else miserable too because she was miserable. They said at some point, I forget who they said they brought in, but they had to like sit her down and have a talk with her and be like, look.
I gotta set America's sweetheart straight.
The worst.
I've never really been too much of a Julia Roberts fan, but you give her that fucking Ed from Cowboy Bebop's haircut and I'm kinda into it.
There's some
shots that Spielberg did where they just
as a reference for Sean.
Thank you.
There's uncomfortably long scenes of just her reacting to things that last like two beats too long for reason.
And talking about problematic moments, the scene that I don't even know why is in the movie where she wishes to be full grown so she can kiss Peter Pan. Like, what the fuck was that? Like.
You knew him as a child.
She wants
ma'am.
To fuck, dog. She's been trapped in that clock for millions of years.
Yeah, it's like an epoch. And now then this is what she wants. She wants the baby that she stole who became man. Like, it's okay. Problematic.
Yeah.
It's a grooming. It's grooming 101, quite frankly. It's, she teleports his ass by blanket back to Neverland. They get, and if her intention is to have him rescue his children, why would she drop him off in Pirate's Cove? I don't know, but she does. And he wanders around. He gets to have some fun, Robin Williams-ing, where he's arcing and doing his thing and talking shit to other pirates.
I did really enjoy the joke where, like she tells him to like R and he R's and then he's like, how you doing? And the other guy's like, pretty good. Like that was like the only part of the movie I laughed. I was like, that was pretty funny.
I don't know how to like put this to words. So I'm going to do my absolute best. This movie has sets that were huge and complicated.
Like, oh, the set, I mean, the production in this looks great. I mean, I think,
you know, like, when they go to, like, the Lost Boys structure.
Yeah, and I was probably going to bring up later, but since you mentioned the sets, I was like, I always thought this movie was held in very high regard by people, so I went back and looked at it, and Spielberg didn't even like the movie, and he's like, I didn't think it was very imaginative. We built all these sets, you know, if I could do it now, I would just do it in green screen. Which is like, oh, you would just
I read
make
that
Ready
same
Player
thing. I was like, that's the dumbest thing I ever heard.
You would just make Ready Player One again. And he's like, I didn't like the movie. And it's like, bro, like, if you didn't like the movie.
The sets and stuff are the best part. Like, the
only good part is the sets and the costuming.
I love the sets and the costuming. I thought it was great. Yeah.
But they're like big, like real back lot. Like, they
they're indoors.
They're like fucking voluminous. Like, so anyway, he goes through Pirate Town, and then they, you know, Smee brings the hook to hook, and all the pirates are chanting, and everybody's happy, and Dustin Hoffman is chewing the scenery.
He's having a lot of fun.
He's having a great time, and I'm not mad at it. And then they throw Glenn Close in a scorpion casket, for some reason.
But that really was Glenn Close.
That really was Glenn Close.
I totally missed that.
Yeah. Boobox. Then they hoist the children out from the storeroom, and he's like, and so then Peter Banning's like, hey, those are my kids. And they're like, and then he just
Hook just cucks him in front of his own children, and they can't save his kids because he's too scared of heights. And then Tinkerbell negotiates a 3-day war. Yeah, go ahead.
So looking at that scene, like, I don't know how the kids thought he would be able to save them.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, right. He would have had to let go of the beam with both hands and, like, swing over with his legs to grab the rope. Like, just.
I got a hot take.
He reached as far as he could, short of getting up and just jumping over there. But then you have no way to pull them back over, and you're stuck on the net with
them. Well, Captain Hook said they just had to touch the hands. So he, like, presumably, I guess he was expecting Hook to keep his word and just let them down. I don't know.
The kids didn't put any effort in. They could have put a little swing on that bag.
Yeah.
Got a little closer to Dad.
Yeah, I agree.
The kids' heart weren't in it, but you know, but it doesn't matter. Peter's scared of heights, so now they're so Tinkerbell's like, hey, jackass, let's do a full blown war against children. Let's have a beast of no nations in about 3 days. Is that good for you, champ? And he's like, yeah, we can do that. So, you know, good fall. God, I love Hoffman in this movie. I fucking love everything he's doing. Peter Pan gets knocked into the water by accident. He makes out with no less than 3 mermaids. He ends
those mermaids smoking hot too. Leave me in the water.
Right?
But they keep like blowing air into his mouth. But they don't actually try to surface him.
No.
Yeah. Some more air. You can get a little slower.
Also, like to Sean's point from earlier, like who is this for? Like, you can just have it one mermaid blow air into his mouth. You didn't need the 3. Like, it's a little excessive. And again, like
his eyes kept getting wider and wider. And it's like when I find out there's another leg to a buffet, I'm like, oh. So anyway, they hoist him up into a giant ass clam, and now he's in Lost Boy Ranch or whatever it's called, and he meets all the Lost Boys. The named ones are the ones you remember, like Thud. And I always thought the kid that was in Band of Brothers' name was Donuts. His name is Don't Ask.
That kid was – I was trying to place him. I just watched that like a month ago too.
Was there also a Don't Tell?
No. Right? So now
– Yeah, you can't be gay in the Neverland military.
Well, they would have to be.
Yeah. So now we're introduced to the latest and greatest version of the Lost Boy hierarchy, which is Rufio is in charge.
Oh my god. This Rufio character was the coolest fucking character when I saw this when I was like 10.
God, he was the balls.
Fucking banged. It slapped so hard.
He's the announcer in Blood and Bone too, right?
Skateboarding around with red highlights in his hair and a sword just fucking. Oh,
he's like the MC
Now, like this is a good.
This dude acts still. He does a ton of voice work. Like if you look at his IMDb, he has like 20 credits a year. He does all kinds of voice work shit.
Yeah, and he's Rufio's, like on Avatar.
He's an Avatar.
Rufio's fun. Like Rufio's still fun.
Rufio.
And I love yelling Bangarang. Like I'm never gonna not like that term. It's just fun. So anyway,
it's also one of my favorite songs from Skrillex.
I was not expecting the Skrillex reference, but
I know that from the Deadpool soundtrack.
Oh, okay.
That song fucking goes. All right, we gotta let him in. So anyway, so now you know Peter finds his imagination again. He's trying to. He gets into a fun food fight. He gets into like so he first of all he gets like harassed by these children because they kill adults and adults are pirates. Then they're like he is the Pan and there's a whole will he or won't he become the Pan again? It's a house divided. Meanwhile, Captain Hook is actively trying to kill himself because there's no adventure left in this world. And then Smee stops him at his behest. And they're like, "Oh, Captain, now we do make the children love you." And then he's like, "All right, well then I'll just arrange for baseball." Also, at some point, Captain Hook calls Peter Banning chairman of the board. Are boards of executives a thing in Neverland? Because I don't know how he would have.
That's what I'm talking there. Fucking about. Like, there's some kind of, like, political structure over there, and whatever it is horrifying.
Like, a board of trustees? Like, what are we dealing with?
I mean, maybe his pirate ship came from the East India Trading Company, and he knows about dealing with corporate overlords, and that's why he broke off to go hug little boys instead.
You think Captain Hook had an IPO?
Oh my god. He got an initial public offering of the East
his IPO was IPU. Mr. Burns choked.
So anyway, he makes the kids. The one daughter is not gonna. The daughter's a grade grubber though. She gets very upset when a pirate gives her an F. But Jack's receptive to this. So Shmi and Captain Hook arrange for a baseball game for Jack to hit a home run.
Because this movie's not taking long enough yet.
Yeah. See where a pirate steals second and then catches a hot one, and that still makes me laugh because that's you can't steal because bad form. Anyway, they're gonna go steal Captain Hook's hook. They can't do it because now Robin Williams' character Peter has finally got a chance to watch his son. He's seen the game he missed, and he realizes that he's been a bad dad. And he watches his son hit a home. His dad, this kid who does not have the build for this, as we stated earlier, knocks this ball into a low orbit. Like,
I mean, to be fair, he is in a land of make believe and wonder.
But the child has not been made aware of those rules. Do you think it just naturally? Maybe just naturally.
I mean, I think it does naturally. I think they go out of their way.
Maybe it's like a Franklin Richards situation where he installed mental blocks on him because he didn't want him to like decimate the universe with his fucking fairy powers.
This movie would be a lot different if the kid turned into Onslaught at the end or something.
So ball gets knocked into the lower ionosphere. They go back to base camp. They're like, I don't know what we're going to do. The ball hits old boy in the dick. He's like, I got to fly to save my kids. And he finds his happy thought in a burned out house when he finally remembers everything, including trying to court Gwyneth Paltrow over the decades, and including the fact that when he was a baby, he made a choice to never grow up because he was aware of mortality at 6 months old. So then,
he also remembers everything and then immediately forgets his real life for 10 seconds, and then it is never addressed again.
Yeah, he's like, pants back.
Well, it's not addressed again because they make a point to say that Neverland makes you forget, but then he only forgets for like a second. Like, I don't know. It's very, I don't know.
He forgets for long enough to be sexually assaulted by this horny interdimensional imp.
Yeah.
And then it's all good. They got to straighten it out. Cause like they realized that we're 2 hours and 20 minutes into this movie.
Yeah.
And so now, another 4 hours to go.
So now it's an assault on the pirate ship. Meanwhile, they've got Jack, just dressed up to the nines as a little baby hook. And
he's in pirate drag.
He's in full blown.
Also, real quick, I'm sorry. I know. So it's important to note that this pirate war is like goofy as shit. They're throwing tomatoes and whatever at each other, and it's very silly.
No. One side is throwing tomatoes. The other side is using muskets and sabers.
But nothing's really happening, right? It's like, why is this in here?
Yeah. Yes. So.
Yeah.
So Peter shows up. He announces his intentions to commit war. Starts murdering pirates. He gets down by the net, and then all the Lost Boys show up with their ineffectual weapons of marble launchers and egg spewers.
I don't want to sound regressive, but Peter Pan flies in like the fruitiest way possible and is also like somehow an easier target the way he's flying than he would be if he was standing still.
Also, is he the only one with the ability to fly?
Yeah, that's why he's the Pan, because it is a title like the Emperor or the Christ, it is, or the Hedgehog. It is Peter the Pan, not the Peter Pan.
Rufio didn't study hard enough to become Rufio Pan.
Yeah, I see.
It is a throne that can be abdicated. The Pan.
So now, they're beaten, The pirates are fighting the pirates, and this one kid transforms into. Do you guys remember?
Oh God, yeah.
I don't know if anyone else remembers these when I was a kid. When we were all children, there were these transformers that weren't transformers, but they turned into rocks. Does anyone else recall?
Yeah, the Rock Lords. They were GoBots though.
I had one that was the granite.
But they weren't GoBots either. They were a whole new thing.
No, I think they were GoBots.
I thought they were McDonald's toys.
No. My mom got me one at Kmart. I remember very – it was gray, and it was like – and it just looked like a ball of plastic, but then it would turn into a robot. But anyway, Thud does the same thing. He turns into he folds in half. His spine goes somewhere else, and he's like Donkey Kong. His one attack is to roll at you until you are dead. He gets a shining moment where he just gets to like just pick a bunch of dudes in the dick.
But again, to reiterate Sean's point, like literally no one is being like really hurt at this point. Like there's
being killed by Peter. Peter Pan is stabbing pirates.
But it's like the Earl Flynn, like they're like, and they just kind of fall over. Like there's no real
except for one.
Very silly impact. And then
And then
a grown man stabs a boy to death with a sword.
A boy to death with a sword. But he also kills boys all the time. Like that's his hobby.
Well, he implied. Just says that, but like you don't see it. No. Yeah, like.
And then
I'm texting TJ. Is fucking wild.
Yeah, and then I'm texting TJ. I'm like, okay, well, if this is what the movie is, and we're raising the stakes, and then this escalates to Peter doing something similar, then like it's weird, but it follows some kind of logic. But we're almost at the end here, and the way Hook is disposed of, like immediately, just it's like, well, why do we even do the other thing if we're just gonna end it like this?
Also, what I don't understand is, so they kill Rufio, right? And then literally the movie is over like 5 minutes later. So his death is kind of meaningless. So why didn't you kill him? Like they should have done, like Rufio was feeling, inadequate after Pan showed up and turned back to being Peter Pan, right? So doesn't it make more sense for him to like want to try to redeem himself and
Like Rufio showed up at the baseball game and called out Hook.
Exactly. Right. He tried to fight Hook prematurely and tried to win and then Hook kills him. Way more sense. Like more to motivated. Do it
because
then
you've
it.
Got because you know in movie parlance in Kino, right? You have the lowest point at the end of the second act, right? So that is the baseball game or whatever, or Rufio leads some like foolish assault that he's told not to prove it, something along the lines of what TJ said, and then the third act is the resolution. But it all happens within 5 minutes. It's like I barely had time to process it. And it's like, oh, we're back to the real world now. Okay.
I mean, I just don't understand.
What the fuck was the point?
I mean, you don't have to kill Rufio at all, but the way they did it, it was just like, or like, just how, you know what, if they're going to do what they did and put it so close to the end, just have him like wound him. I mean, everybody else is healed by like magical nonsense. Just have him like slightly wounded and then you think he's, you know, he's hurt or whatever. And then
Tinkerbell heals him because then you need to have her give her something to do. Because she's basically a non-factor.
That stupid clapping thing like they used to do when they'd show it on TV.
Yeah, it's a very odd decision. I don't know. I thought it was very strange.
So anyway, so now
they knock over
there's a whole bit where. And maybe this is why time doesn't exist in Neverland anymore, because Hook destroys all clocks because the alligator that ate his hand had a clock in it.
I didn't remember that part of the myth. So, or the mythos.
The alligator
had a clock in it and it ticked. That's what, okay.
Then he killed the alligator, turned it into a quiet clock. Then the alligator, I guess the corpse power of the alligator gets revenge and eats old man. And somehow Captain
doesn't eat him, or he just like disappears. This is what I'm talking about. Like,
no, it eats him. Also, it eats him because it burps.
The statue does.
Statue burps.
But like, it's the crocodile.
But it's stuffed
now. Full of hook.
I still think they did it like that because they were leaving it open for a fucking sequel.
Probably. But
brutal.
Captain Hook manages to age, I guess, but no one else does because now he's an old man.
Well, I mean, you don't know how old he was when he was. He's. I think like it's implied that he was always that age.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess it's sort of like fair.
So according to IMDb, Hook is devoured by the reanimated corpse of a taxidermied crocodile.
But it doesn't like it doesn't move.
It doesn't move. It just kind of falls around him.
I mean,
if that's what they were going. Fair, me neither. You know what? Touche.
All right.
He got me on that one.
Sometimes I fall forward, I just land on food. And I'm like, all right.
That's how I eat anyway. I'm just like, ugh.
Hey, kind of got like hungry, hungry hippoed.
No, like I say he eats more like a duck.
Yeah, big shit.
Anyway, so now Captain Hook's gone. Ostensibly, the pirates are all put to the sword. Thud becomes the new Pan. Everyone else goes back to London. Phil Collins never checks on anyone to see.
No, they just call and they're like, everything's good. All right.
The children have inexplicably returned to their homes. Toodles has his marbles and can fly now.
And he goes back as a 90-year-old man.
And it ends on him like flying around as the credits roll. I'm like, why did, well, of all the decisions, like that one too. Like,
and then he smashed into the South Tower.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Toodles did 9/11.
So has the fairy magic now creeped into our world? Am I to understand that? Like, has this changed the entire paradigm of the, like, don't introduce that at that.
Like, maybe, like, the crazy has allowed for the belief in flight to happen.
No, as it does.
And well, then you get the spinoff, you get the Santa Claus the movie universe, where you have, the candy canes that let you fly. Shout out to John Lithgow's Santa Claus movie.
Damn. This movie came out in 91.
Damn.
So Spielberg.
So old.
Are we done the plot now?
Yeah.
So Spielberg, Williams, and Hoffman did not take salaries. Their deal called
for them.
I'm getting there. Their deal called for them to get 40% of the picture's gross revenues. They got 20 million from the first 50 million in gross receipts.
Holy shit.
And then TriStar got to keep the next 70 million. And then anything after that, they each got a percentage of.
That's insane. God damn.
That is crazy. Joe Flacco made $300 million worldwide. So they made fucking bank on this movie.
That's like crazy.
What's his name? Robert Downey Jr., where he took the points on all the Avengers movies and stuff.
Nicholson was the first person to do that, right? Like actor wise, where he took the points.
So you said that was Hoffman and Spielberg did that?
And Williams. All three of them.
And Williams.
Wow. Yeah. That's fucking crazy.
That's
because I read, and you got the wiki up, right, Alec?
Yeah.
I read that this was like basically a financial disappointment for the studio. But, I mean, it sounds like it made a lot of money.
It's like 300 mil on a 50 mil budget. Like, I feel like it
was. Yeah, 300 mil on a 70 million, according to Wikipedia. 57, so that means almost over four times his budget back. Like that's
And that's $1991.
$91.
I think that's like all told though. I don't think that's
with like video and all that shit.
I could be wrong. I don't know. But anyway, anything we want to talk about before we get into Five Knuckle Shuffles? We already talked about a lot.
The couple on the bridge that start flying when they first go to Neverland is George Lucas and Carrie Fisher.
Oh, I'm surprised his fat ass got up there.
I'm surprised the fairy dust could pick him up.
Well, I'm surprised Carrie Fisher didn't snort all the fairy dust.
No.
I feel like I read somewhere that she helped write. Like, she might have been the one that they wrangled in to get Julia Roberts in line, now that I'm thinking about it.
That's the movie I want, the gacked up Carrie Fisher, like screaming at fucking Julia Roberts dressed up in a potato sack for 2 hours.
Alec, was your favorite part of the movie the questionable child sexual situations? We say no.
The fact you had to think about it is a problem.
Well, I was trying to come up with my counter to it. No, that was not my favorite part. My favorite part,
but it was most of the movie.
My favorite part was when they had an entire dinner made of cake frosting.
Yeah,
what the different fuck colored was it? Frosting.
Like
it was cake frosting, and that 8-legged turkey John Madden would bring out at Thanksgiving.
It was called a turducken, and you know that,
man. You know it's a turducken.
You know, Carrie Fisher on this movie is an uncredited script doctor.
Oh, jeez.
So she
that is Shane Black in Predator.
Bro, that is the job to get in fucking Hollywood. Get me a script doc, uncredited script doctor. I could do that shit. This movie sucks. Make it funnier.
And Glenn Close just happened to be visiting Robin Williams on set, and Steven Spielberg was like, want to be a pirate? And she was like, sure.
Oh, yeah. Go in the fucking boo box.
Everyone's fucking just on cocaine the entire time this is happening.
All right, five knuckle shuffle time. Sean.
Did you say me?
Oh, and yeah, Sean.
We did say you.
Yes. Sean. Oh, okay. It's a two.
Okay.
I really didn't like this movie, and I don't know. I'm not the intended audience as a fucking 40, however old I am. Sad.
Oh, too sad.
I didn't. Also, like, I think I texted you this. Expensive movie for children that's as long as Lawrence of Arabia. They gotta stop whatever they're doing every 20 minutes to have some fuck off scene, and it just makes the movie longer. Like, there's no way I couldn't get in and out of this bitch in 90 minutes. Like, it's just farting around for so much. Like, in Dunhoffen, fun. Bob Hoskins is fun. Everybody's trying. Weirdly, Robin Williams kind of like the worst part of the movie.
And he's very understated.
I don't think he's doing a whole lot.
Yep.
Yeah. So I don't know, man. Like this is like the anti-Dick Tracy for me. The sets are impressive, but it doesn't have any style. Like Dick Tracy is like, right? All like that's style. Not a great movie, but it's
all those nice something to shoot for. Painted matte backgrounds.
Yeah. This isn't for me. I don't know. Like, I don't have the affection for it. And it is interminable. And again, like, it's creepy in an unintentional way, I guess. Like, with him just running around with these boys, like, rediscovering his boyness. So, and then the fucking Rufio thing. I don't know. It just wasn't. I'm struggling to come up with anything to say, but it wasn't for me, but it really wasn't. Alec.
This movie is something else. It's an absolute mess.
It is a mess.
It's barely coherent. It's barely a movie. And like, I'm really surprised that Steven Spielberg made this. Like, obviously I know that he did.
Yeah, we didn't think he sucked till later.
Yeah.
Well, wait a second. Was his next movie after this fucking Jurassic Park?
Maybe. Or Schindler's List. Or something.
I gotta look. Keep going.
You're both science fiction movies.
But this movie's got a lot of problems, and it's like Sean said, yeah, Jurassic Park was next.
That's insane. That's Jurassic just Park, insane to think of it.
Then Schindler's List, then Jurassic Park 2, then Amistad, then Saving Private Ryan.
God damn. It's
fucking wild to go from this to fucking Jurassic Park.
Then AI.
Jurassic Park? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Absolute classic.
But what were you saying, Alec? You're talking about how I was right about something.
yeah, it's not the tight, fun-filled action romp that I remember. It needs more Rufio, honestly. It needed more conflict between him and Rufio.
Agreed.
Yeah. And Rufio is the best character in this movie. It's a shame he's only in it for, like, 5 minutes. Well, I guess besides Hook and
Smee. Yeah, Rufio v. Hook would be a lot of
Hook
fun.
And Smee are the two best.
Yeah.
But
I think
Rufio is like a tremendous character. It's a shame
I think you guys are right.
More.
I think if it's just Rufio versus Hook with like the specter of Peter Pan looming over all of it, like I think it's a better movie.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with him.
Yeah, it's got a lot of problems. But it's a 10. I can't separate this movie from how much I loved it as a child and how many times I saw it. And just that Rufio chant, Rufio, 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 like that is going to stick with me till the day I die.
Well, we do love yelling O.
Oh, yeah. We do.
Stop it, Vasco. He's coming to the Orioles. apparently there's a 15-minute short called Bangarang that stars him. That's about, it's like a Rufio prequel that he made. It's just a quick little short film that
Rufio begins.
Got a 10 on IMDb.
He's only one rated it.
I mean, that's what I was going to go.
It's Francis Ford Coppola's letterbox review of Megalopolis.
I made this movie and I think I did a good job.
Go in, rate it, then lock reviews so nobody else can come in after you and change it. TJ.
Yeah. I don't know. You know, I walked into this recording thinking it was going to be a 4, but I'm with Sean. This is a 2 for me, dog. I don't know how. I share similar memories to Alec and Goggs, where I remember watching this as a kid, like, all the time. Like, this, we had the growing up, we didn't have a ton of VHS tapes, and this is one of the tapes we had, and I watched it a bunch, and my sister and I watched it. And I don't know how I watched this as a kid, because this movie is boring as hell. Like, I remember the pirates, and I remember, you know, Bangarang and the food fight and all that shit, but, like, man, this movie takes fucking forever to get going. I mean, I talked to Sean when I first started watching this. Admittedly, I was sick as a fucking dog, but, like, I did the fucking movie, the podcast thing, and paused the movie, and I was like, dude, there's an hour and 42 minutes of this movie left. I couldn't believe it. I mean, the decision to, like, drag the fucking first part of that movie on for so fucking long, like, just get to fucking Neverland already. And I mean, the plus side is I feel like Dustin Hoffman's really good in the movie. Bob Hoskins is really great. Again, I really liked, and I should say that I think the look of this movie in general, it looks really good. Like, even when they're in the real world, there's just something about this era of movies. Like, it just looks great. Yeah, it's shot on film and it looks wonderful. And I loved all the real sets. Like, again, I wish they did more with them, but I love the look of this movie a lot. But man, like, I just wish something would happen. Like, it's so fucking boring. Like, I really just don't understand how a kid can watch this movie and be into it, because it's just, even when it, like, picks up, like, nothing happens. Like, it's so boring. And now looking at it with 2024 eyes, like I said, the Peter Pan going back to marry the granddaughter is like, huh? That's a little fucking weird. And all the stuff is weird in this movie. Again, like the kid adult dynamic, I guess that works in like a fairy tale, but it's very weird because, again, you've introduced, like Sean said, you've introduced that there's this dynamic where they can spy on the actual world. So they understand to a certain extent what goes on in like the real world. It's like too much. Keep it more abstract and silly. If you're going to, like, this is a silly fucking
premise.
It's
the fucking Terminator Salvation thing. Don't make me think about, like, how you're getting food and, like, why you're not all dying of radiation poisoning.
Exactly. Like, keep it fucking simple, man. Like, I don't know. This movie just, again, it just took so fucking long to do anything. It just killed me. And I was expecting to enjoy this movie. I remember liking this movie. I think you can go back to last week. I expected to like this. I was looking forward to it, to revisit it. And I didn't care for this at all. It was a chore to get through. I did not care for it. I was very bored. I had my phone out a lot. I couldn't find anything to catch my attention. I don't know. Even, you know, nostalgia be damned. I just did not care for this movie whatsoever. So yeah, it's a 2 for me, dog. So that's is that
Goggs.
Everybody? Goggs hasn't gone yet.
I'm not going yet.
Goggs is going to give it a 10.
Yeah.
In my heart of hearts, I know that this movie's a 6 at best.
A 6.
But I'm still like it's. I'm saying I have too much affinity. I warts and all, I have too much affinity for it. So it's like a 9 for me. Like I love Hoffman in it. I like it for all the wrong reasons. Like I'm giving the score, but it doesn't matter. It's my score.
Of course, you're right. It doesn't.
You don't see either. How Hook treats me when nobody's around. You just see him when he's having a bad day in front of everybody.
Right. Like the part, even like the little like I love Hoffman in it. I love Hoskins in it. I love Rufio. I love the way it looks. I love the vibes of like Neverland. Like I just it still sort of takes me back to that nostalgic like era and affection of it. The part where Dustin Hoffman is goading Rufio into fighting him, and he's doing the chant to him, and he's just got that kind of weird growl thing. He's like, Rufio. Like, it's like, and like the slow turn, I don't know, like, I know objectively it's not great. Like, I know this, but like, I can't help it. It's the heart wants what it wants. So.
Dogs, I want you to do me a favor if you can arrange this. I want you. Without influencing them, have your kids watch this movie and see how long it takes them to get bored out of their skulls.
They will be bored instantly. They don't like movies with real people in them unless those people are Avengers. So I know what this is going to take.
Okay.
That's the correct opinion, by the way. I feel the same way.
It's, but no, this is like, and I wouldn't say there's part of this movie where I was a little bit bored. Like, and it goes a little too long, but whatever. It doesn't matter. There was a serial. There was fun shit. There was, you know, I like yelling Bangarang still. It's on. So there we are. What's okay. Next? Who's got a pick? What's our pirate?
Anybody got a pick?
What's the theme?
It's Planksgiving. So anything pirate or nautical related.
Go ahead.
Okay. Alien Resurrection.
Yes. Those Alien are pirates. 100% those are pirates.
Yeah. All right.
Without question, those are pirates. I thought you were going to do like the documentary of that guy that threw that no-hitter on acid because I believe he was a pirate at the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
I thought you were going to pick Cutthroat Island because you're such a
good writer. No, I would pick Master and Commander, but that movie's like 9 hours long.
All right, Alien Resurrection.
The most Dark Horse comics-y of all the Aliens movies.
We'll see if anybody's opinion changes on this movie.
Yeah. It might. I don't know. I feel like because I've hated all the other Alien sequels so much that it might actually change for the better.
It's the City of Lost Children and
yep, correct. Same guy.
Delicatessen.
Amelie and Delicatessen.
Yeah.
Same guy.
Branch.
All right then.
All right.
We went long, fellas. We went long.
Just like Hook.
And hard.
Going long on Hook.
We did. That's true.
All right, boys.
All right. See you guys.
Good night, fellas. Okay.
Bye. Bye.